Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 77, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have a brand new guest.
That would be me, Malik B. El-Amin, historically from Africa, more recently from St. Louis, Missouri, and currently residing in the West Valley of Los Angeles.
But more important than that, sibling of...
Oh, you don't have to give in to nepotism here. Go ahead.
Back as usual, Peter from Glendale.
Greg Barton from St. Louis, Missouri.
Wow, that was a really long introduction. I'm impressed. And the news, first up, the Dish Network and Blockbuster have teamed up to launch a Netflix-killing service, which I actually think it's a good idea, because without competition, Netflix can, basically we've seen, Netflix
they can double your price, basically.
Yeah, okay. They can do whatever they want, because right. There's nowhere to go if you don't like Netflix. So I'm actually excited that these two companies are, I always wonder why Blockbuster never did this.
Although you have to say, I predict whatever this new thing is, the pricing will either be the same as the new Netflix thing.
Well, I'm not saying.
But I bet because they're going into it now, their content will be much higher. And it'll probably be all HD and everything. And that's going to be their trade-off. Like, I don't think it's going to be cheaper than Netflix. But no. It'll be like, whoa, they have Stars HD. They have, like, all these things. But you'll be paying, you know, I don't know, $20 or whatever. I bet that's what it'll be.
And that's fine. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't have a problem, like, if you get into the business now and you match Netflix prices now. But that, my main issue with Netflix is it felt like, because they were the only business out there, that they could do whatever they want, and they didn't care what their customers thought.
Right.
So they were like, we're raising our prices by 60%. Take it or leave it, because there wasn't anything you can do. And I think they were surprised by how many people actually quit and actually walked away. Because I think I was talking to you about this, that Vudu, which is a service that Walmart bought, its membership went from under 1 million people to, after the whole Netflix thing happened, now they have like 3 to 5 million people. Like they went up like over 100-600%,
which is still weird because Vudu is it's a pay as you go service.
It is a pay as you go service,
it's not
but
monthly.
Right.
I think I don't know if you guys discussed this before, but I think Netflix was planning to take some hit because they really do want to get out of the mail order business.
Yes, they were assuming that there were a good chunk of people that were going to do that because they don't want, because you said that to me too, that they don't really want to keep doing the mail thing because that costs them money.
Right. I mean, the thing is...
So they knew that was going to happen.
The streaming is way cheaper for them.
Right.
And so, they would rather you quit doing the DVDs. But I don't think they assumed everybody was just going to walk away from them, period.
I think what was happening is more people have been keeping the DVDs but then dropping the streaming. That they didn't want. That's what I think is kind of weird. But
right
for them, yeah.
Right, and they didn't anticipate that. I don't. Basically, this is not going the way they anticipated.
No.
And then on top of that, Stars, if they're trying to go straight streaming, Stars is now pulling out of the streaming deal.
That's big.
They're going to lose a big chunk of their content. So even though right now I actually quit the DVD service and I'm staying with streaming, which is exactly what they want. But based on how I watch television, it works better for me. So for me, like, I'll watch a new movie on DVD once a month. You know, I don't watch a lot of movies through DVD. So to me, it's actually cheaper for me to do the pay-as-you-go service. Because it's like $3.
So you're saying if you wanted to watch the movie, you just look it up and go, oh, all right, I'll buy this for $5 or whatever.
Right, exactly. Because most of the services are like $3 to $5. And that's still cheaper than Netflix is charging $8 or $9 for their DVD service. So if I watch one movie a month, then it makes more sense for me to either use iTunes or Vudu or whatever. And yeah, so for people like me, it makes more sense.
Or the Redbox, you could do that.
Yeah, I thought about Redbox too, but
it's only $1, right?
It's $1 a day.
Well, so just you watch it that night or whatever.
Yeah,
Redbox is only pretty much new releases,
right?
I think, right?
Right, and that's pretty much what I would use it for anyway. But, yeah, it really depends on if I'm feeling lazy or not.
It's weird for me because I am a big movie guy, but because I see so many movies in the theater, don't really watch a lot of movies on home video, my big service is actually still Hulu because it's more television. I don't really use Netflix that much. I use Hulu. I use like every day, and it's weird because Hulu's only, I think Hulu's subscriber base is like 1 million, and yeah. Aren't they being like is
bought,
buying
they're,
them?
Well, they're trying. So they're trying to sell themselves.
Their whole thing might change and stuff. Right. Hopefully for the better, but like to me, I would be more freaking out if Hulu had like went away. I'd be like, no, like, but. Netflix, a part of me is kind of like, I don't know how much I use Netflix.
Well, Netflix is old. It is old shows. That's true. But I
find... Well, it's nice that Next Generation.
Yeah. And
that's cool.
I've been watching
that.
Yeah,
totally.
Anyway, next piece of news is that David Cross has been cast as a reoccurring character from Modern Family.
Well, he was on Arrested Development, and there's a big show that he had... It's something like, I don't know, like Greg and Tim, super awesome show. It's a really goofy name like that, which I haven't seen. I've heard it's very funny. But David Cross he's great. He's a very funny, irreverent, kind of unusual looking guy.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out.
Playing a weird character. What I'm assuming he would be, how much do we know about Phil?
You're saying we haven't met Phil's family.
Yeah, so he could be his brother. Like, he'd be the wacky, he's very much would be the uncle.
Well, I like Modern Family, so whatever. I'm good. Next is some sad news, though not necessarily for us on the podcast because none of us watch it, but Hawthorne on TNT has been canceled, and I never watched it. The only thing that I feel sad about
maybe
is...
Maybe that's why it was canceled.
That was she
a doctor? Was that
she was a nurse.
Wait, I thought that's Nurse Jackie.
I think she's a nurse, too.
So they're both? I don't know Nurse Jackie's the
came,
Sopranos
right,
woman.
But they came out at the same time, and that's why I was like, why is the same show coming out? So, that's why, she is a nurse, because when they do the title of the show, they highlight the RN part of her name. They make that capital.
Okay.
So, I'm pretty sure she's a nurse. The only thing is, I like Jada Pinkett Smith, and it wasn't anything about it that grabbed me, so I didn't watch it. And then I found out that James Morrison was in it, who I love.
Yeah, he was her boss.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Like, and then I saw a commercial, I was like, oh, he's in that? And then, it's over now, so
wait,
I might watch it later.
And did we already do the news that your favorite guy is coming to Dexter? Did you do that news already?
No, I have not done that news. It's slightly casting news.
Cast. We don't know who he is.
Oh, that's true. I just found out late. I know everybody else has found this out a while ago, but Mr. Edward James Olmos has been cast as the main reoccurring character for this season of Dexter.
That normally means he's the serial killer, but we don't know for sure.
We don't know.
I don't know.
James,
you know, so,
and as a serial killer, it's like, wow,
that would be
awesome.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
That man can be so intimidating if he wants to be.
And we know Common, it had already been scheduled. And I think he is,
right?
He's a cop, so he's for sure not the big bad.
Right.
But
if you got Edward James Olmos, obviously you make him the other serial killer.
You make him, if he's not a serial killer, whatever it is, he is the big player in the game against Dexter.
Right.
In whatever capacity that is. Which I would assume is the serial killer.
Right.
So, but yeah.
But that would be great. I'm kind of excited about that.
Which is good because I wasn't that excited about Dexter. So
yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, well, that sounds great. You know. So.
All right. Let's start talking about the shows. First up, we're going to talk about True Blood. There's only two episodes
left. There's 10. Yeah, it's 12. That was really good. I thought there was a little... As usual, I thought True Blood had a saggy middle. But this is turning out to be my second favorite season. I really think that Fiona Shaw has been great, as this kind of, kind of a dual role. She's this head witch, but then she's also, is it Victoria?
Antonia
from like thousands of years ago or whatever.
More hundreds. She's like from the 1500s.
Actually three major things happened in this episode.
Right.
Eric got his memory back.
Well, that's not in the order. He got his memory back
first.
Oh, that's true.
That's the first. Well, it's in the big battle scene.
Right.
Well, no, you're. Oh, okay. Well, technically, Suki does her mind power, so that's a big deal. And then that.
And she did it more in Will.
I don't know if she meant to break the curse, which means he gets his memory. It's more like she did something emotional, and it just happened to break the curse. Does that mean Pam is normal now? Because she looked normal.
Well, she remember they did that. That's what I was thinking.
Peter, you look normal, but that doesn't tell us anything.
No, that's true. But there's a character, he's right.
Pam got like this rotting disease on her, so she almost looks like a zombie. Yeah, all her flesh was.
But and there's a curse. Was that she was like so? But when we see her on the show, she hired somebody to do makeup on her, so she looks normal. But in this episode, it felt to me like she was normal again. I think she's fine.
I don't know. I mean.
It felt like what she did was she broke the curse, period.
No, because the other two vampires followed Antonia back to the shop.
Oh, that's true.
So I'm going to say no.
Well, so anyways, all right. So Eric gets his memory back.
Right.
And then second thing was?
I don't know what you think.
The character that we all hated died.
Oh, the brother!
The loser brother died.
Well, the thing is I actually felt a little bad about
whatever. No, I felt a little bit bad for him when he gets killed, but I was glad. I was like, all right, let's move on. Like,
yeah, I mean, he was the character that was begging to die all season. Like, you were just like, kill him, kill him, kill him. But then the way he went out trying to save his brother.
Right, it was good. Totally good. And then it makes his brother go, I'm going to kill this guy now.
Yeah,
like,
and
that was great.
And I hate that guy too.
So I totally want Sam to kill him.
So that all works out. And they basically set up Alice to become the new alpha.
Right.
Because if Sam kills this guy like he's planning, then Alice's obviously the biggest guy in town.
Right, and he's hitting on his woman.
Oh, yeah. Actually, he probably slept with her.
Well, he's probably slept with her by now. Yes, right. So
I was like, why the heck?
I don't know why Alcy likes her anyways.
Well, that's true. But, say you're the other guy. I don't even remember what that Wolf's name is, the alpha. Why the heck? Alcy's 6'6". He's the biggest guy in town.
To mess with him psychologically?
Why would you sleep with his woman?
To mess with you psychologically, like
yeah, and then he kills you.
I'm assuming you're his pack will still protect him because he still has the numbers.
That's true. You know, so. He's assuming that his pack can protect him before Alcide manages to kill him. That's a really big assumption.
It is a big assumption.
So I was like, that's stupid. And especially because he was trying to get Alcide's loyalty. He wanted Alcide to be his backup. Why would you sleep with his woman?
Right. Then the third thing was we see, or this to me was the third big deal. We see Antonia leaves the body of Marnie, and Marnie wants her back.
Yeah. Because
normally the whole thing we've been thinking, this poor nice witch woman has been taken over by this like vengeful, but she's just like no, I need to come back. We got to take care. We got to kill them all. And she's got that big speech about also not liking humans and how terrible humans are. She convinces her to go back, and then. Jesus, he's hoping to get his friend Marnie back. You've got that whole...
And then he realizes that they're screwed.
He realizes
screwed.
This is not what you think it is. And then at the end, he zaps... I think doesn't...
Marnie or Antonia...
It's a whole bunch. Like, Suki's there.
She zaps everybody. Yeah, she zaps everybody back inside the building.
Yeah, it's pretty... Yeah, it's pretty good.
And then, of course, they have the cheesy action hero shot at the end... Where it's got...
Oh, I forgot.
No, it's Bill, Eric.
And they do a still of it.
They're all in black with the freaking big weapons.
Because we didn't mention that the crisis of the show is that the reason all this is going down is because the vampires have decided enough is enough. We're going to go in and kill everybody. And of course, Suki's like, yeah, but Tara's there. I don't care. Even though she just saved his life. Even though... Suki just saved Bill's life. I don't care. It's kill them all. You know, collateral damage. So the point is at the end, they're all still trapped there, and we see at night the vampires are coming out. They've got their weapons.
Yeah,
so that's why. So it's
and they got like they've got like grenade launchers everything, and they're all.
Why
like,
don't they just firebomb? But what I mean, why don't just take a helicopter if they're gonna do that? You know?
Yeah, it's like they show up with ridiculous weapons. They're all wearing black outfits, and I was like, "Did we just walk into Rambo? Like, did we just move into another movie?" But and then it freeze frames, and it's like to be continued. And I was like, "Really?"
Oh, actually, also was glad that they're somewhat getting to the point of the. Even though I like the actor, but I can't stand his character on the show. There's the bumbling sheriff who's addicted to V.
Oh, right.
And so his cousin is the.
They're both Balfours.
Right.
Balfours.
So he. Takes him to tells him to try to get him clean. He's not cured yet or anything, but I mean, He's on that road.
Yeah, that was good.
I actually did like that.
I thought that was really good.
They make him walk home. See you later. Like, you know, so, yeah. I thought it was a good episode.
Yeah. Actually, I agree, except I was angry when I got to the end.
Because
I wanted...
No, I wasn't angry, but I rolled my... I was like, oh, come on. I just rolled my eyes,
right,
you know.
Right, that's true. All right, and so thumbs up for...
Yeah, no, good.
Next up, we're going to actually talk about Breaking Bad for the first time ever on this podcast, because Peter and I both decided to watch the show, and we cranked through it. And
it's fourth season now, so we...
Right, so I think we kind of both fed the machine in that he's like, I'm on episode 5, I'm on episode 6. So we were doing that little competition, and we both finished around the same time.
Are we on 6? Is it 6 now? Whatever it is, we're caught up.
It's season 4.
Season 4, but is it episode 6 or 7?
I don't know.
I mean, we know what episode we saw. Yes. But sure, we're about halfway through. But yeah, I think it's for sure one of my favorite shows on television. My favorite, but it's one of my favorites.
I really like it. I think it's, and I can't say that it's not getting enough acclaim because they keep
crashing the Emmy
every year, right?
it's
getting plenty of news.
And a lot of people like
buzz.
It.
Yeah,
it's not really it's not an underdog. If anything, it's just a show you and I finally caught up with.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, but yeah. But this episode was great. I thought,
Tell us why it's one of your favorite shows on television.
Well, the premise for anybody who's never seen it didn't really sell me because the main premise is basically a chemistry teacher finds out he has cancer, and along the way he ends up becoming a crystal meth, not dealer, creator.
Right. He decides that he needs money for his family. He doesn't have enough health insurance to pay for his medical bills, and he hasn't set aside enough money for his family, for
his
kids.
His 50s.
Yeah, for his kid to go to college. And he's thinking, if I die right now, my family's screwed. So what can I do to make money for them? And his brother-in-law is a DEA agent and took him on a ride-along, and he saw, you know, the crystal meth lab, and he's like, these guys don't know what the heck they're doing, because he's actually... pretty much he would be a world-renowned chemist if he had enough confidence in himself to go out and do
it. If one path had gone. There kind of is...
There's a point where...
Where he could have been
he could have been like a Steve Jobs kind of head of a big CEO. Like, he was really brilliant.
All right, so that's the premise. Now, why is it good?
Well, the premise didn't really sell me because I have seen the show Weeds, which is about a suburban mom who sells marijuana, and it's more of a comedy. And I was like, I don't really like Weeds. Am I going to like a show where it's a guy who sells drugs? I'm like, it doesn't really. But, I mean, all the things that you would think a really good show has. I mean, the setting is great. Would you say it's
Arizona?
New Mexico. And it always feels like really hot, and the sun is like very oppressive. I mean, it's a very like... Everything is very sharp and in focus and almost like the sun is like beating down on you. So I like the feel of the show. The acting's great. I don't think there's anybody that really sucks. I mean,
no.
I thought the teenage boy was okay, but no, he's good. Like, I mean,
yeah.
I'd say all the actors are good to great. I mean, Bryan Cranston, who's the guy from Malcolm in the Middle.
Right.
Again, another show that I'm like, that guy, he blows me away. Like, he has layers to his character that he manages to be like unlikable, but really smart in a way that I respect him so much to the degree that if he's about to get caught, which usually is going to happen on a show, if you have characters dealing drugs and stuff, there's going to be situations where the law is going to, especially if your brother-in-law is a DEA agent. But I usually end up rooting for him. I don't want him to get caught, which is interesting for me. Like, to me, that's a sign of a successful
The thing that makes this interesting is, like you said, the character has layers. When you first watch him, you think he's a sympathetic...
Well, you feel bad for him.
You feel bad
for
him.
He's dying of cancer.
Right. And he's got...
And he works at a car wash to make extra money. He's
kind of a loser. He seems like
a loser,
right.
Yeah.
He seems like this guy who had the potential to have a really good future, but everything in life went against him, and he's like, all these things are bad. You feel really bad for him. Until once he realizes that he's really good at making these drugs... He takes this kind of twisted pride in it and totally commits to being a drug dealer. And to the point where once he shaves his head and wears that hat, the Heisenberg.
That's the hat.
He calls himself Heisenberg. And once he gets a reputation and people are like, Heisenberg's product is the best product out there.
The
like,
blue stuff.
The blue stuff, right? Right. So, and his purity is like 99% pure. No one else is anywhere near as good as his stuff. So once he gets pride in that and realizes that, he kind of loses his mind a little bit because he really buys into that and he really takes pride in that and he's willing to do whatever it takes to protect that. He kind of loses focus on, oh, I'm saving up money for my family. And it becomes more about his own ego.
Right, because in... I mean, we're in the fourth season of the show. He has got quite enough money at this point.
He's got millions. Yeah, he's got millions.
He could stop by now.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, so... And then there, in the third season, he did try to stop.
Right.
Which I don't want to give away, but I mean, he did. I mean, also, the other big part of the show is that...
Jesse.
I don't remember how it happens, but Jesse was kind of a, you know, a druggy, loser student of his. Not sure how he meets
him. He deliberately goes to find him because he remembers this kid from my class used to do drugs. So he knew that he was the high school drug dealer. And so he didn't have an in. He was like, well, I can make this product, but I don't know what to do with it. So Let me go find a drug dealer that I know that I can give my product to. So he teamed up with Jesse and he's like, I'll make the product. You figure out how to distribute it.
To me, the heart of the show is this twisted...
relationship.
Kind of father-son relationship that they have. And they can be... And when I say father-son, I don't always mean that in a good way. They can be really cruel to each other.
Right.
And but actually, in a way, it's usually more Walt to Jesse.
Last week, what it was he was pretty sure that the big boss that they're working for right now was going to kill Jesse. Like, Jesse disappeared and didn't show up for work, and he was like, oh, he's killing him.
Oh, we should say... So, yes, there's a main character. Is it Giancarlo Esposito?
I don't know his name, but
I think that's
Gus.
The actor. He's in a lot of Spike Lee movies. He's fantastic. I always call him Chicken Man.
That's Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's fantastic.
He's the big boss right now.
He's the big... Actually, until you meet him, Walt's always the smartest person in the room.
Right.
And then you meet him, and you're like, oh, this guy might be smarter than Walt. And
right.
Walt might not know that this guy is smarter than him. He is basically the drug dealer.
Right.
Who controls pretty much, I don't know, pretty much the West Coast.
Yeah.
And he's been dealing with... Mexican drug cartels and everything. So he's on a whole nother level. I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars. So this is a big deal for Walt and Jesse to be in with this guy, but...
They screwed up.
Complications arise, and now their life might be in danger, like, so...
Right. You know that Gus is going to kill them at some point.
Well, once he has no use for them.
Right.
Their big thing is that Walt does make the best product, and if he can just figure out the secret formula... He doesn't need him anymore.
Like,
that's
like the Colonel's secret recipe.
Pretty much.
Right,
yes.
But the thing is he...
And he tried that.
Well, the thing is...
But putting a ringer in there.
Right. Well, the thing is, if it was just Walt, Walt would have been fine. Walt could have worked for him for years. Jesse's the one that put the snafu in the whole thing.
Right.
Where Jesse did something that Gus had to respond to.
Right.
And
although, to be fair, because we are making... Jesse's a very flawed character, but I would say the thing that he does, I was very sympathetic to.
Right.
I mean,
yes.
So.
I agree, but the way he did it, it forced the hand. Gus basically had to kill Jesse.
It's like, I mean.
There was no way around it. So Gus had to kill Jesse, and then Walt stepped up to defend Jesse and killed, like, two of Gus's guys.
Great! Yeah, fantastic.
So once Walt killed two of Gus's guys, Gus is then like, well, dude, I gotta kill you now. And then what they did was they flipped it so that the only guy that could replace them, they killed that guy. So that Gus had nobody to replace them. So now it's like a weird kind of waiting game to where the second that Gus has somebody that can do their job, he's going to kill them. They know it, and he knows it. Everybody is well aware of this fact.
Well, and this is where our argument comes from. Walt is very aware that my time and Jesse's time with the company of Chicken Man is limited. Jesse,
isn't his time limited anyway because he has cancer?
Oh,
but it's okay.
His
cancer right now is in remission. It's in remission because it's a successful TV show. So yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that the show will end with either he dies of cancer or maybe he just.
He's not going to get. He's not going to die of cancer. He's gonna get killed.
I don't know, man. He might.
Well, anyway.
Anyway. But it seems like to me what's going on this season is there's the mano a mano between Chicken Man and Heisenberg of who's going to make the first move, and what the weird thing that Libby and I are kind of.
Our debating
is the Jesse character in the middle seems to not really care.
He has pretty much resigned himself to being dead. And because of that...
And also remember, Jesse, unlike Walt, doesn't have much to live for.
Right.
His own parents have pretty much disowned him because he was a drug
addict. I understand.
What does Jesse have, man? I mean, Walt really does have, I gotta take care of my family. And he's... Even though his relationship with his wife really is hot and cold, I still feel like they care about each other and everything.
Right.
What does Jesse have? That's a huge deal, man. I mean,
I agree.
So.
Well, actually, all he has is Walt, which is sad.
Yeah.
Because as much as Walt will be there to defend him through thick and thin, he won't tell him to his face, I care about you.
Yeah, he can be so... like tunnel vision about it or whatever.
And that's the thing
is
he always makes whenever he makes a move, it's a brilliant move, but he thinks about it like, I'm making this brilliant move to get me to point A. He never then thinks about what are the repercussions of the things that I've just done to get to point A. And then when all those other things happen, he's surprised. And I'm like...
But I think what makes it a great television show is that the show allows for all those consequences to happen, but it still manages to weave in a way that's pretty surprising. So clearly we like the show.
Yes, and we've talked about it way too long. And I apologize that if you're out of the show, sorry. All right.
So,
Woo! Okay, moving on. Hey, Greg.
Hey, how you doing out there?
Do you want to talk about Eureka?
So, Eureka continues to be an entertaining show. I hear that there's only going to be one more season. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yes, but the episodes are still entertaining. They have this story arc that's going where a bunch of the folks in Eureka are vying for positions to go to Titan.
So this season has all been about that. And this week's episode, because I was really angry about last week's episode where the counselor, the DOD guy came in and said that Allison and Carter couldn't be together. And I was like, are you kidding me? It's taken them 4 seasons to get together. And now you're going to have a bureaucrat come in and say you got to break up, which I thought was complete BS. So I was... supposed to watch this week's episode, and it's the one thing that I forgot to watch.
So in last week's episode, as Libby just mentioned, you know, they have this bureaucrat comes in and says, you know, they can't, Carter and...
Allison
can't be together. And then they appeal, and then the same guy comes back...
which is BS.
...to handle their appeal, because he apparently just got promoted for whatever reason. But it's still entertaining. You know, he's the guy from Princess Bride and... kind of channels that character when he's kind of going around
when death is on
doing
the
different
line.
Things.
Yeah. So what was the final declaration at the end?
Oh well, yeah. So he basically says that, you know, anyone would be a fool who tries to break you up and tries to separate you two. So, you know, he ends up approving of their relationship after it's all said and done. But what we do get in this episode is kind of some backstory from some of the characters. As they're going through their interview process, they have to wear these synaptic memory reader thingies.
Right. So we got, it ended up giving us flashbacks in everybody's childhood.
Right. And so we actually see that Fargo actually went to some sort of space camp, with, Will Wheaton's character.
So they've known each other their whole lives?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And so Fargo was really was on a team that was trying to build the best rocket. And it was actually Will Wheaton's character that actually won the competition. And so you see their animosity goes back many, many years.
So, all right. Overall, what was the episode great? Medium?
Yeah, it was entertaining.
It's entertaining. You're being consistent with your wording.
But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't fantastic. It was just, you know, a regular episode.
All right. You said you also wanted to talk about Warehouse 13.
Anybody else out there watch Warehouse 13?
Cricket.
Yes.
If Allison was on the podcast, she watches it, and she always gets irritated that none of the rest of us watch it.
Basically, we get a little bit more insight into the Regents, who is this body that supposedly governs the different iterations of the Warehouse, from Warehouse 2 all the way to Warehouse 13, and we go to visit the Regents in this building. They're up on the 40th floor, and it just turns out that Kate Mulgrew is one of the Regents, which is kind of cool because we haven't seen her since Star Trek Voyager, so it's really nice. So basically there's an artifact, of course, that someone is using to try to kill the Regents, and the entire episode is trying to track down the person with the artifact and try to neutralize the artifact. And they're finally able to do that by the end of the episode, but then we kind of get some more insight into Kate Mulgrew's character, and that she actually is Pete's mother.
What?
Yes, by the end of the episode, so... So we're going to see her again. We're going to see her next week.
Did we know that he didn't know who his mother was?
Well, no, he knows who his mother is, but we didn't know. As the viewers, we didn't know until the end of the episode.
But didn't he not know anything about Warehouse 13? If his mother's a Regent, shouldn't he have known about Warehouse 13?
Well, no, because it's all secret.
I feel right, Connie. All right, continue.
If she had told him, she'd have to have killed him.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So now she's going to be a reoccurring, right?
Yeah. Normally when they have some guest stars in, they normally appear for a couple of episodes. You know, they've had Lindsay Wagner in for several episodes, and Kate Mulgrew, and they have reoccurring appearances from the actor who plays Fargo in...
But he's actually Fargo.
Yeah, he actually is Fargo, yeah.
Yeah, because they cross over those universes. All right, so this week's episode, good? Thumbs up?
Yeah, good episode.
Okay.
And it continues next week.
Next up, we want to talk about Alphas. And Alphas has been getting better every week, except that I have to say this week, I'm not sure if I felt that way. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I was, I don't know. I was, you know, I've been kind of concerned about Alphas because I didn't want it to become too much like the X-Men. You know, it's like they kind of established a premise that these were regular human beings that just had something about them that was more enhanced than the regular human being out there. So
right. One
had better sense of, you know, hand-eye coordination or you know, strength. And there was always a downside to using their ability. But for some reason in this episode, we had the actor's name is Garrett Dillahunt, who I remember from playing the Cro-Marty character in...
Chronicles. He's on.
Raising Hope.
Yeah, he's on Raising Hope. He's got his own comedy right now. But he always He's in every sci-fi show I watch, and he's always playing a bad guy. Though this time they played him as kind of a deluded child a little bit. Like he never really matured. Like the impression, like his father was a preacher, and his power is that he can make people believe and be in paradise, so feel like they're in heaven. But the negative of it is after a while, their body shuts down and they eventually die. And
right, because it's like giving them drugs.
Right, and so they basically OD on it. But his whole life, pretty much, the impression that they gave him as a child, he kept that. And so I didn't really get the impression he was necessarily evil. I felt like he really did think he was helping people to paradise. And that based on his belief system, he thought he was doing the right thing. However, he would have gotten a lot of people killed.
Well, that's a more metaphysical, philosophical question about the bad guys in shows. Do they think they're evil or do they think they're doing the right thing from their perspective?
I think the second is better.
Right.
I think if they just think they're evil, I don't.
Right.
That's very interesting.
Because all they have then is a maniacal laugh, right?
I mean, if you have... what I'd rather have is villains who they have their own way of living. It just happens to be in conflict with what our hero wants. You know?
But this one, I felt, because they kind of gave him a childlike mentality, it made him seem a little more innocent. And so his behavior was more like what a teenager or a young child would have done in that situation. So I didn't really, like, I knew that they had to kill him because killing him released everybody from his power and stopped him from putting more people in his power. So I understood that they had to kill him, but I kind of felt a little bad that they did. That's all.
Well, I did like the fact that, you know, because everyone's just supposed to have, like, this enhanced ability, but for some reason for him, he was, like, emitting light from his body, and I was like, come on, really?
No, but it wasn't the actual, that's what they saw. That's not, he actually physically wasn't emitting light. They looked at him and saw light around him, but it was, from what I understand, it was a chemical response. If you, the doctor, when he explained it, he said he would, they were, he was triggering a chemical response in their brain, which was making them see light around him.
Ah, I see. Okay. I must have missed that dialogue.
But anyway,
but, you know, I just thought that the world was very similar to how he played Cromartie, because he was kind of like this learning computer. And
that's true. That's true. I could see that.
You know, hitting like a kid, so, I don't know.
Oh, what's my, what's the key? Show,
and there's going to be good episodes and bad episodes, especially when, you know, you're looking at, a 20-something episode run, which is maybe why I like BBC America better, because you might get less episodes, but they all seem to be quality.
That's true.
I guess by the end of the episode, the really shocking part was really that Dr. Rosen was the one who had to pull the trigger.
He had to kill somebody.
He had never operated a gun before.
Right.
So that's going to be, I'm sure we're going to see some fallout with his character because of that later.
Oh, that's true. All right, so wrapping that up, Alphas this week was okay, but I think the show as a whole is getting stronger. That's my
opinion. I agree, I'll keep watching.
All right, next up, The Closer.
Overall good episode, but the two highlights were actually not the...
The case, you mean?
They weren't the two highlights weren't the case or what we would say is the more seasoned regulars. It was the guy from Lost and Raider. Raider is kind of a regular now, but she's more like a newer.
Right. Raider had the awesome
she has the moment
scene
of the whole
where
episode.
But yeah, she's like some bad guy's running away.
Circling a bad guy that they're chasing down to Chinatown in Los Angeles, which I actually just visited. Bad guy who's killed who did a shooting spree gets out of a car and is walking into a crowd. All the cops are behind, going, you know, stop. But of course, obviously, they can't fire because there's a crowd of people there, you know, in front of the guy. So Raider, who is Rosalind from
Battlestar,
the name from Battlestar, opens her trunk and takes out this shotgun, and totally was like, "I got him," and shoots him right in the head. But it's like
a beanbag, something.
But it's just a great joke. She just like pulls out, bam,
and she hits him right between
between the eyes. I mean, it's what she said she wasn't going for. She was going for the chest.
Which is why,
but it's just awesome. But she just also because that character she never has a firearm.
Right.
Like she just never does that. So that's a great moment. And then the main seasonal thing is that Brenda has just gotten a lawyer because she and theoretically the department might get sued for a wrongful death case. So the guy who's her lawyer, I don't remember the actor's name, but he was Satan. He's Lucifer on Supernatural, and he was
Jacob on Lost.
So he's always kind of this major, smarter than everybody else type of character. And he's kind of the same, except now he's kind of like pretty sure he's kind of like a gay version, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not
a
like
gay
a
gay version of what?
Of
this kind of really smart, smarty, smug character,
right.
I'd say. Like, he's not like a... Like a Mitch and Cam from Modern Family, but I mean,
he's
just his affectations and everything.
He's effeminate. He's just a touch effeminate, just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
just
he's still very much like a hard lawyer and everything.
Right.
But
he just gives it just a little bit, so you go, is he gay?
Right.
Like just like that. But I thought it was a little subtle. Peter thought it was overt.
I think it was overt. Not in this episode. I thought in the first episode he just had a lot of hand gestures, and I was like, it's a little over the top. But actually, in this episode, I thought. Course corrected or whatever. I thought he's really good. The actual episode Well, I already forgot what was the case. So was the episode was okay, the case is okay, but I mean,
yeah, the big thing that happened in this episode is when he's basically questioning, the lawyer was questioning the crew.
Right.
Because the whole reason why there's a wrongful death case is because somebody spilled the beans. Somebody basically talked about the conversation that happened in the car.
Where, it looks like it's Provenza now.
I don't think it's Provenza. I think it's... What makes you think it's Provenza?
Because he wouldn't answer the question, have you ever talked about this with anybody else in the department? He wouldn't answer the question. He's like, F you. So I was like, are we supposed to think it's Provenza?
No, I actually think it's
But then why didn't you Gabriel answer the question?
I don't know. Anyway, so the main thing is the wrongful death is Brenda, basically this guy had immunity for killing a grandfather and his grandson, and she wanted him to give up the immunity, and he wouldn't do it. So she basically let him off in the middle of his, in front of his house that was surrounded by his gang that now wanted to kill him.
Right, and the kid says... He's like, you know, you're not going to do this. You know, they're going to kill me. Or something. He does something to the point. I don't know if he says that exactly, but I think everybody involved knows if this kid gets out of the car,
he's going to
die. He's bad, you know.
Yeah.
And she does. She lets him out.
Yeah.
And he gets killed.
And
so, like, that's
the only people,
big seasonal case.
Right. But the only people who know what happened were the people who were sitting in that car. So somebody in that car talked. And that's why there's the wrong
one. And you think it's Gabriel because Gabriel is very, he's very much of the rules.
He's very much like, yeah, I think I'm right, and if I think I have the moral high ground, I will turn everybody else in.
Right.
And he's done it before.
Well, you sound like you think it's a bad idea. It sounds like wrongful death is exactly what happened.
Oh, it is.
Except that the, you know, it's a cop show. In the world of the law, you know, when you get to, like, these characters and stuff, things happen that you... There's another character on the show, Sanchez, who's just like, I don't feel bad for that at all because you realize he was dead no matter what.
Yeah,
he's like, you make it sound like if, you know, we drop him off, he gets killed, he was going to die. Like,
right.
And then,
no
so,
matter
so
where
this,
they drop
this
him.
This cop character is just like, you know, that's it's really a technicality.
Right.
So that, and I'm like, well, okay, I can see his point.
Because
the thing is,
yes, if they dropped him off right there, he was going to die immediately. If they dropped him off down the street, if wherever he wanted to be dropped off, he was going to die by the end of the night. His gang had decided he was going to die. So if they dropped him off anywhere, he was going to die.
Right. And obviously Sanchez's point is like, this guy, which is very much the way cop shows are, the character's like, look, he killed a grandfather and a little boy. Like, no, I don't care. Like,
right.
I mean, that's what the character, you know. So, but obviously the main character of the show, Brenda, most of the time it felt, no, we absolutely did the wrong thing. But then when she went to the murder scene, when she sees the blood on the sidewalk...
No, she always thought she did the right thing.
She did the right thing. But I think being at the scene, I think she started to question herself.
Right.
Which is what she should do because she's the main character of the show. I mean,
right.
She should have those feelings.
Right,
so... But it was good, yeah. I mean, I like, you know...
I think this episode was pretty good. It was... It basically revealed that there was a mole. Like, now we're trying to figure out who gave them up. So we now know somebody gave them up, and we got to figure out who it is. So that's pretty much where... And I like the fact that the lawyer made the announcement to the group. He's like, whoever's talking to the other side, let them know this.
Yeah!
And that was pretty good. Like,
I win. No matter what, I win.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was actually a pretty good moment. So anyway. Next up, we want to talk about Burn Notice. So, Malik, I'd like to know, since this is not your first time ever seeing Burn Notice.
No, I watched all of seasons 1 and 2 and perhaps part of 3 as well.
But this was the first time you saw an episode of season 5?
Correct.
Okay, so what'd you think?
I thought that my memories of it are better than what the show is currently. I will tell you, a couple of things that I liked was let me back up, actually, to say that the show is kind of very much a formula now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And even in that formula, all we really have to look at is how they execute mostly their action sequences. Even the relationship stuff, at least in this last episode, wasn't really interesting. I mean, we know the fact that I hadn't watched for at least a season and a half. And the fact that Fee is dissatisfied with their relationship is about the same as it was before.
Right.
Except that now they're actually living together.
Yeah, but her feelings about it are the same. Yeah, almost. That's true. So that seemed very much, almost like a soap opera.
That was Julia's thing. She brought the same thing up when we were watching it. She's like, they haven't changed at all.
So it's like a soap opera where you can watch and you're immediately caught up on the story.
Right.
Because nothing has really changed. So all that we really had to look at was how do they execute the fun stuff. And there I'd say they have a mixed grade. I kind of like their little John Woo scene with the gun battle.
Well, to me, I thought it was... Did you notice? It felt like in this episode, they did at least that I can think of, three scenes that were like scenes from movies. Like, you're saying, like the tango, right? You saw the whole episode. So, like, that's True Lies, right? That's like... Arnold and Jamie Lee Curtis, like, don't, and then of course they're trying to get information. There's that. Then there's the steam bath scene.
That was a failure. That was an absolute failure. two men in towels fighting each other badly with bad camera work. So I'd say that scene was an absolute failure.
I thought they
did a little better with the John Woo gunfight scene.
I thought the Mr. and Mrs. Smith type. I thought that was fine. Yeah, I thought that was entertaining. But I would agree with you. I think it is very much, it's not that it's a formula. It's that even within the formula, like how many episodes does Michael have to pretend that he's some guy that he like, I mean, it just is so, yeah, I mean, it's a formula, you know, but I mean, I still like the show, but I could see what you're saying. I agree. And it wasn't really,
nothing major.
It's not a great episode.
Like, except for the very end.
But the end is huge.
Yeah, the very end. The CIA agent realizes that Michael killed the guy, which he didn't.
Well, right.
But
he says everything that a guilty person. It wasn't me. You just let me make this phone call. Like that. That's what the bad guy always says. You know?
Right.
So from her point of view, I'd be like, keep the gun, whatever, man. Like,
yeah,
so,
he looks really guilty.
Yeah, not
he looks. He looks really guilty.
And the last thing I will say is just in that show, compared to one of the other shows we're going to talk about later in particular, just the believability of it, even when you have a show where unrealistic things happen,
right?
They don't seem to believe it enough in their world for me to believe it.
Ah, that's true.
I can see that.
So, because there are other shows like Doctor Who we're going to talk about in a little while where unbelievable things happen, but they're so invested and committed to it that we can believe it.
The other thing too is that it's honestly to me, another show we're going to talk about. One of the main things I like about Bird Notice is more. They finally added a new character Jesse, and I thought he's great and he's a much needed addition. The problem this season is that they feel like, or it feels to me, like they keep splitting the team up. And what I like is I kind of like them all interacting together. I love Sam, totally like Jesse, and I like them together, totally fine. But I'd rather have them all somewhat together. And so now that you've got Fee and Michael on this fake honeymoon thing, and now I'm just like, that's just not, like, I'd rather have them together and everything.
And they're doing that to break up the shooting schedule so everybody has more rest.
Right, totally makes sense. But it's like, that to me is like,
but it takes
if you have a formula show, then what I've got to look forward to on Burn Notice is the explosions, which are great, you know, top notch, and the actors. I like Bruce Campbell, and I like, what is the guy? Is it
Kobe Bell?
Yeah, he's, you know, so I want more of them, because I it's not that I need the, like you said, I don't need what they're doing to be believable. It's just that I like their interaction.
Right.
And so if you take that away, it's not as, like, fun. So,
right.
Yeah.
I get you. All right, so Burn Notice this week was, but it's leading up to the finale.
Well, yeah. So,
leading up to the finale, which is next week.
Is that a mid-season finale?
Yes. It's the summer finale, because it comes back in January. So it's leading up to that.
So next week, that's it? Or the week coming up, this is the end until...
Until January.
Oh, yeah. All right.
So, all right, next up, we're going to talk about Suits. And since my partner in crime that watches Suits is not here, I'll talk about it really quick. And the only thing I want to say is this week's episode is building up to... The show got a little more serious this week. I mean, normally the show is pretty straightforward, and it's got some comedy, and it's very charming. But it got a little dark this week because the guest star was Gary Cole, who can play, he's a great actor, and he always plays a good, charming, but slimy kind of guy, and that's pretty much what he is. He's like, you find out that Harvey used to work for Gary Cole in the DA's office, and Gary Cole was crooked, but not crooked in a way that he was taking bribes, but crooked in the way that he was, the way he got his convictions is he would suppress evidence, he would lie, he would do all these things to put people away that he thought was guilty. The episode basically ends with Harvey realizing that somebody he put in jail was innocent. And this guy has been in jail for 12 years. So the episode ends with him saying, I'm going to get this guy out. You know, so that's how it ends. And so the preview for next week is he's trying to figure out how to get this guy out of jail. And the guy, of course, hates him.
Whoa.
Right. So, and it leads to a fight. And Harvey never gets in fights and everything. So it's getting, it looks like the show just got a little darker. So I was really excited about that. And Gina Torres rocked again. Because why are you not watching the show? See, this is my thing. All right. Next up, I also want to...
Hey, if Gina Torres is on the show, I will watch it.
There you go. Nice. Please, start watching. Is it on Hulu? I'm not sure if it's on Hulu or not. But it's
USA. I don't think it is. It's USA, but... I downloaded the pilot, but I still watched it. But that was on iTunes, so...
But yeah, you should definitely watch it if you can. It's a really good show. And the fall finale is next week, too. All right, next up, I want to talk about Rookie Blue really quick. We haven't talked about it in a while, and Peter dropped the ball and didn't watch it. But this week's episode, what was really cool was they take the rookies, and they're preparing them for undercover work. So they take away their money and their phones, and they basically say you have 24 hours to come back with as much cash and drugs as you can. And they're like, just be safe, whatever, but you guys are cops. Have been cops for a year. And
another show.
What'd you say,
Greg? Another cop show.
Yes, but it's a cool kind of cop show.
I like it. I'm sorry. I just thought that was really hilarious. They said, come back with as much drugs and money as you can. Oh, but be safe.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of a contradiction.
Right, and they don't have any weapons. They have nothing. So it's like, and they give them no money. So they start from zero. It's like you're starting in a video game. You have no money.
Right.
You have no weapons. Go out, get some money and drugs, and come back, and you have 24 hours. And they give them a bus token that if you get into an emergency, you can get back home with the bus token. That's pretty much it. So this episode was really cool because you got to see the two girls, Nash and McNally, they stuck together. They were like, well, it's bad. Because at first they assumed that all three of them were going to, because there's three of them, it was Nash, McNally, and Epstein. They thought the three of them were going to stick together, but Epstein was like, peace, I'm on my own. And he went off to do his own thing. But the two women, they decided to stay together.
Which one's Nash?
Nash is the black woman.
Then who's the blonde girl?
That's Peck.
Okay. I know McNally's the main.
Right. Okay. So they stayed together and they decided to hustle and pool. So they hustled and pool and got a couple $100 hustling, and then they went and bought some drugs. But Epstein, basically you find out that Epstein's brother committed suicide and used to be a big drug addict, and that's why he became a cop. And so what he did is he went after the guy that was his dealer. The guy knew him from when he was a kid. So he didn't try to pretend. He told him the truth. He's like, I have no money. I have no cash. I have no car. I have nothing. Let me ride with you and hang out with you and see if I can do a job for you. You pay me or whatever. So he pretended to be like a low-level drug guy. So the second that dude left him alone with his stash, Epstein just stole it all. He stole all the dude's money and all the dude's drugs. And he came back to the base with like armloads of stuff. So Epstein totally won the game. It was awesome. I was like, way to go, Epstein. Anyway, next up, finally, we're to Torchwood, episode 9. We only have
penultimate.
We have one more episode. So guys, what'd you think?
I've been pretty negative on Torchwood this whole season, except for the premiere, which I really liked. This was my favorite since the premiere. It is interesting because they jumped 6 months in time.
Well, no, it was 2 months.
No, six.
Was it six?
Yeah, it was six.
Oh.
Yeah, it was six. I'm pretty sure. Either way, they jump ahead in time.
Right.
So part of it was like, couldn't we have just done this at episode 5 or something? I thought, I'll let everybody else talk, but I really liked it. And I obviously want to talk about The Blessing, which we're all going to get to. But I didn't really... My only thing was, we know that snarky mole character is going to have to...
She's going to have to die.
She's clearly going to put a monkey wrench in something and then probably get killed. But, I mean, I'm just like, oh, who cares about this? You know, like...
Yeah, the mole was super obvious.
You know, but besides that, I was... I mean, what do you guys think? I like
Greg?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought I was happy that they finally actually revealed what the blessing was, because I kind of felt like it was just going to be this thing that they were going to kind of like drag all the way through the entire season and just kind of hint at it and do all these things. So I'm glad that they finally got to the point where this is actually a real thing, and you know, it somehow is interacting with Jack's blood in some sort of way.
Well, that also explains how Jack was sort of mostly healed, and then all of a sudden he wasn't healed. It's because his blood is literally trying to leave his body, which is like, that could be a problem. I was like, Jack, you should probably not get any closer to the blessing. He could literally rip apart.
It's like the blessing is like pulling Jack in, then probably they don't want to go find it.
Well, Jack doesn't want it. Like, they could probably go find it, but they shouldn't take Jack with them. But of course they're going to.
Right, of course.
Also,
I want to see what, when we get to the blessing, it sounds like how you see it manifests in who you are.
Right.
So I want to see what Jack sees.
That's
true. The episode ends, we only see what the girl from 6 Feet Under,
Lauren,
we only see her version of it.
Right.
Which, what did you think of that, Greg?
Yeah, I thought that was, well, you know, when they were taking us in there, I kind of thought it's like, oh, is it going to be an alien? It's probably going to be an alien or something, you know. And I'm not really sure if it's an alien or if it's, you know, just a, I guess, something that's been there on the planet like this whole time and it's just really, really old or what.
Well, you know, I actually just thought about Angel. It's like there's an episode of Angel and there's a hole in the world. It seems like somebody should have known. You know, like that reminded me of that episode. But I thought that everything about the episode was pretty good. I was afraid they were going to have the team apart, but they really didn't exactly. They sort of did at the beginning, but everybody was pretty much back together.
It worked really well.
Peter said it was like an Anne Frank thing where they had the dad hidden in the basement so he couldn't be captured. But man, they made the police and everybody seemed just so cold.
Which is weird because I actually thought that police guy wasn't that bad in the first time he visits. When he's leaving, he says something like,
you need to be careful.
You need to be careful and get your affairs in order. To me, that made me kind of him sympathetic, like him going, look, I know this is my job. I'm telling you, you need to fix this. But then when he comes back later, it's all just like, he says something like, see, he's cold. He's like, well, he's going to be hot soon or something. I was like, really? He didn't say that?
Yeah,
I thought that was weird. Yeah, that felt really cheap. You know?
I would agree that whole kind of process, that the two visits didn't really work very well. And now, I mean, the first time he missed it because he just can't see what's going on in the basement. And the next time he has a new app on his iPhone. Because he got a brand new iPhone app and now he can see people hidden in buildings.
Thermal, right.
So, yeah, he came back with SWAT and everything.
But I did like the woman attacking the molester murderer. That was satisfying.
Gwen Cooper.
Gwen, she hit him first. She was hitting him with a pan or something.
We all knew Gwen Cooper was a badass, but this past episode, when she drives the car into the pharmacy. Shoots out the camera and then ends up like attacking the guy with pots and pans in her own kitchen.
It's funny. I liked that, and I didn't mind her protecting her family having, although I think Bill Pullman's great as this character, as Oswald Dane. But I was kind of annoyed by the husband.
Yes.
Oh, Reese?
I was just like that didn't, for some reason, like Malik said, it is kind of satisfying having Gwen go off on Oswald Dane, but having the husband, I didn't like it. Like, I found it.
He kept saying that I'm going to kill him.
I just didn't think it was satisfying.
I don't believe that Reese would kill somebody. Like, we've seen Reese.
Well, he is a pretty terrible person.
He is. But, I mean, we've seen Reese since season one. And Reese is like a big teddy bear.
Yeah.
So I kind of like, I didn't believe when they kept saying, I'm going to kill him if you leave him. I was like, no, you're not. So that whole thing didn't really work for me. But I like the fact that Reese is the one that figures it out. He figures out that the two cities...
Interestingly, I liked when they figure out the two cities are on the opposite ends of the planet.
Right.
And then they look at the symbol and they go, oh, we've been seeing it the whole time because it's a line.
Right.
Now that I liked. I don't like that when the mole girl gets on the phone, her phone does the goofy triangle. I'm like, why would it do that? Like, you're the most covert, like, secret agent on any planet ever. You would not have a graphic. Maybe it would just say blocked number. So it would not have this.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? I hated that.
Yeah, it's like, why not just line up everyone at the CIA? Who
has hey, man, what's that cool thing? What's that triangle? That's
take them away.
Not at the same time. Greg, say it again. Say what you just said.
No, I said, why not just line up everyone at the CIA who has a spinning triangle on
You're right. It's interesting. I didn't notice it at the time, but now that you mention it, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, and that's this is the first episode that Malik has ever seen of this season of Torchwood. So, like, he got jumped in at episode 9, and I was like, okay, this is what happened before. I tried to explain
it. So here's a question. Who has now gone to their globe and verified that Shanghai is opposite of...
Oh, I haven't.
I haven't either.
No, except, I haven't either. I don't even have a globe.
Except that, didn't we learn this years ago, aren't globes really like most globes, I don't know what's the word, but aren't they like... Western-centric, that if you look at the real globe...
No,
like
that's a flat map. That's different.
Yeah, flat maps
the
are
flat
Western.
Maps are what you're talking about.
Where you think the Northern America's
right.
high, and it's actually... Like
yeah, but a globe, would they have the longitude and latitude when it's
but
actually...
But I think the dimensions still are off. I think that's right. The dimensions, because... Because
I've seen it somewhere, and
yeah,
I was like,
oh. Africa is actually bigger than they say it is, and...
Compared to Europe and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. But the latitude and longitude...
Which you're saying the globe, which is just where things are.
Right. Well, the thing is your latitude and longitude, that's accurate. So if they're on the same... I think the whole thing was that they're on the same longitudinal or latitude. No.
It would be a combination of the two. You can get an axis.
Yeah. Right.
That goes between the two. I was just curious. I was mostly joking.
Yeah, I would love to know. Yeah, I don't know.
But I think they left us off in a really good spot, especially when Jack's blood starts going across the floor. You're like, holy crap!
No, I'm very... I mean, it's all ramping up. I hope the finale is really satisfying. Wait, now maybe I missed something. And who knows, maybe Malik, only seen it once, got it. Do we know what the blessing does?
Not exactly.
The guy in China... Translated, the blessing saved me.
Right.
So that makes me sound like it is immortality, even before all this immortality
stuff? I don't know. I don't know. But the thing is,
I don't know what it has to do with the three families, either.
Well, no, it had... The three families...
kind of bought Jack, and then Jack escaped, but I don't really know...
No. Well, I was... This is the deal. The three families bought Jack, but then he escaped. So what they had left was his blood. And so they used... For the last, 60, 70 years or whatever, they've been experimenting with his blood to figure out a way to get to immortality, right? So the blessing, whatever it is the result of all those years of using his blood to get immortality. And what I get the impression of is that once they got it to work, the members of the family, they either, this is a guess, I'm not 100% sure about this part, when you see the blessing, you either kill yourself or you become sort of, maybe not immortal, but live longer. Like, that's the impression I get.
Did they find this actual center of the earth blessing because of the blood?
I'm not sure.
That thing's clearly been there longer than 60 years.
Right, and I don't know.
I'm
not sure, but they've been using Jack's blood to try to figure out how to crack immortality. And the blessing is the end result. That's all I got. Like, that's what I figured out. But hopefully by next week we'll know the answer.
I just hope that the finale isn't just that they destroy the blessing and now everyone's okay. That'd be lame. I hope it's not just...
Everybody drops dead, Jimmy.
Well, I mean, those who...
No, it's
going to
be a big helicopter and, you know, people are going to rappel down a thing and then throw some C4 in there and blow the whole thing up.
And
a big Hollywood explosion at the end.
Is Mekhi Phifer going to die?
He might, because he's not healed, remember? Because I was like... I didn't know if he was healing, but it's been months later, and his wound is still open. He's still having to package, you know, to tape up his wound and take the blood, the painkillers and stuff. So he's not... After 2 months, he shouldn't need If he was healing, he shouldn't need to be doing right. that 2 months later. But he is, so he's not healing. So yeah, he's gonna drop dead, as far as I can tell.
Well, have we heard MacGyver Pfeiffer would be signed on for more seasons of Torchwood?
We don't even know if they're gonna have another season of Torchwood.
Oh, right. So, okay. But overall,
yeah, it's good. All right. Next up, we're gonna talk about Doctor Who, and this week's episode was a scary-esque one. What was it called?
It's like Night Terrors. Night Terrors, or something like
right?
That. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't like the Weeping Angel scary, but you know.
No, but I would say those freaking dolls are creepier than the silence looking guys.
Yeah, that's true. Those dolls with the slow head turn.
Only thing I didn't like about the dolls was the sound design, because the sound design makes them sound like children, which is fine, but it's not really that creepy. I would have done something a little bit more, like maybe amplify it or put some reverb. Something, there was this one thing a little off, but still, the actual paper mache looking things are creepy.
Yeah.
You know, like, I thought it was a really
good. And if
episode.
They touch you, you turn into them. So that's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's pretty good.
And you remember it, as. Amy does.
Right.
Well,
after,
it was
so,
just a paper doll or whatever. You know, I thought it was a good episode and a really good use of the Doctor doing what he does best, you know, which is when he's trying to figure things out and he's doing it super fast and you're trying to, like, catch up with him. Why are they, you know, what is this? Why? And what was the thing when he points his
screwdriver
and he's like, off, is it said off the charts or
yeah.
something like that? Whoa! You know, like, that was. No, it's all good.
Well,
good. Like,
that scene, what you're talking about when he's trying to figure stuff out, what's really good is when he's talking to the dad and he's trying to decide whether to open up the cabinet or not.
Right.
He was like, we'd be crazy to open it because it's all, he was like, but we should open it, right? You know, like, and then the guy was like, we should open it. He's like, that's crazy. Why would we do that? You know, and so him going back and forth with that guy was really pretty good. Like, Malik was watching it, and I think you said you figured it out way earlier than I did.
I figured out some piece of it, but I actually want to back up for a second to tell you that I haven't watched Doctor Who since he had curly hair.
So, that would be the fourth Doctor.
Right.
Wow.
So this was my first time watching Doctor Who in
21st century.
Any type of modern incarnation. And hopefully the episode I saw is representative of the show, because it is excellent television. Just amazingly done. So I was really pleased. I was pleased in practically every aspect of the show, from the writing, the dialogue, the direction, the acting. The fact that we took, you know, you talked about how it was kind of scary.
Right.
And, you know, we have all these horror movies where they cut people up and rip people open and, you know, 10,000 ways to die. And yet the tension of this show was boiled down to... Do you open the box or not? You know, it really came down to, there's a box, we don't know what's inside it. Do I open it or not? Really basic, but captivating and interesting the entire episode. So I just think it was an excellently done episode. So I hope that the others are similar in that way. And the Doctor, of course, he's you know, when I first saw him, I said, oh, he's kind of goofy looking.
Well,
yes, I agree.
But his, the way he, just his whole manner is, it goes back to that idea I talked about, things that are unbelievable that occur, but they're so invested in it that as an audience member, I can easily believe it.
Right.
And then, Libya, to your last point about, yeah, I did figure out relatively early that the kid was causing things to happen to people. I didn't know the specifics of how it was working. But I picked up pretty early on people that he was interacting with in some way or another. They shortly ended up getting put into the dollhouse.
Right.
So I didn't think...
I didn't figure out that it was a dollhouse. I don't know why I didn't.
Well,
I don't know why...
Yeah, it was... When they finally opened the cover and you see the dollhouse, I was like, oh, they're going into the dollhouse.
I just somehow didn't do that. Yeah, I don't know why I didn't. Like,
But, I mean, to even if you don't say dollhouse, obviously they're all going to some other realm.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yeah, I figured that out.
So I figured out pretty early that it was the kid causing it. I didn't think there were actually other monsters, but I didn't know the specifics of how it worked, and I was fine with that. I didn't feel like I figured it out too early to not appreciate it, because they still filled in you know, the why. And I love the fact that the kid didn't really exist. You know, he wasn't born. I thought, you know, the way that was revealed.
Well, he exists.
Although, that's a great moment, though, when they're looking at the photo, and he's like, she's not pregnant. And
yeah.
Like, oh, that's because she can't have kids. What? And I was like, that was pretty good. That was a good.
And then they both turn and look at the kid, and they're like,
who are you?
Right. Well, also because it's framed where you've got just the doctor and the dad, and you know the kid's just, you know, he's just behind them.
And he's listening to them.
Right. You're like, what's the kid going to do? Yeah. I would agree. I would say this actually folds pretty well for this second half of this season of Doctor Who, because I would say while I do like Doctor Who a lot, I feel like usually they have a good premiere, and then they usually have a follow up episode that's a standalone, and it's usually like kind of dumb, like the Venice.
Well, they don't. The Venice one was really bad.
Where I'm just like, I don't care. But this, I was like, oh, this is a pretty good. That's a pretty good episode, because really had nothing to do with the arc.
Right.
Really, except for that very end where the children are singing and you see the image
doctors
of the doctors
dying.
Really. But I mean, besides that, it's just a standalone. But it was, yeah, it was totally good. Yeah, I
was actually afraid, because normally when I try to introduce somebody into a new show, I watch the episode first to know that it's a good episode. And I was like, well, the previews look pretty good, so hopefully it's a good one. And so I'm glad that it actually was a pretty decent episode. The only thing I have to say negative about it, because I agree with you guys about how great it was, the only negative I have to say is when we got to the very end, I was like, well, that was a little syrupy. It was like, it was the dad loves the kid, so that saves the day at the end. And I was like, oh.
No, I was, it is, but I
it is. Yeah. That's the only thing that I would
My
say.
My only thing was, Malik was saying how you need characters besides the doctor and his companions to be trapped in that dollhouse. People that the kid has met before. Totally fine with that. Did the landlord need to be the jerk with the dog?
Yeah.
That was my only like, but
well, I knew something bad was going to happen to that guy.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Although, he's fine at the end. Is he still going to bully that guy for the money? Or has he changed? I don't know. You know, like,
that's not the point. Was really about the source of the child's fear.
Oh, sure,
right.
But
so he had these different sources. Some were rational. Some were irrational. But they were just simply different sources of fear.
Wait, what was the? What did? Because I forget. What does the old woman have to do with the child?
She was just kind of creepy walking. She was just a little creepy. That was.
But she's not an actual threat the way. The
No, not at all. She just was walking with her little bag, and he was afraid of her. Because children are afraid of old people.
Well, okay, then I think on paper that makes sense. I guess I just wish then, if the landlord is going to be a real threat because of the bullying of the dad, I guess I just wish it was more interesting or something.
Right.
You know. Well, that's a pretty tiny thing. I didn't have a problem with the syrupy ending. I liked it.
Everybody thumbs up?
Yeah, actually, to be honest, yeah, I liked everything I watched this week.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this will because...
Well, I guess Burn Notice is all right.
Yeah, I feel like everything is building up to the finale, so this week everything has been great. One thing I want to... I want to do a pool for the upcoming new shows. We're going to try to figure out amongst ourselves which shows we think are going to be the first one canceled. Because there's 31 new shows premiering in the fall.
That would be anything on the Sci-Fi channel.
No, they don't cancel immediately. I'm talking about, like, because mostly what, I'll give you this hint. In cable television, if they bring a new show, they'll actually air all 13 episodes or whatever. On network, a show can go two and out.
Yep.
They'll have two episodes and they're canceled. So if you're going to do your pool, you should pick something from a network. I would also recommend you pick a network such as NBC or Fox. Those two networks cancel very quickly. So send in what you think is your top two or three picks of shows that are going to be canceled the fastest. I think we'll do that next week and talk about that a little bit. I got to look through and figure out what my prediction is going to be, because then the following week everything premieres. So once everything premieres, then that's cheating, because then you'll see ratings.
So you're not talking about new shows then?
No, I'm talking about new shows.
No, new shows.
Well, if how can you guess before they premiere?
Well, that's the point. We're guessing.
Just you're guessing based on nothing.
Based exactly.
On like promo and audience, what do you think is going to fail? That's
right.
The point. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the fun part. Is just to see, like, you know, like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to guess Whitney, because I think that looks terrible. And I
so that's his prediction.
That's probably my prediction. I think it looks pretty bad.
So it's like whichever show gets canceled the fastest, that's who wins. That's who gets the props. All right, so let's wrap this up. If you have any feedback or you have predictions of your own on what show you think is going to be the first one out, let us know. You can send us feedback at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, and we're on Facebook, and now we're on getthepointradio.com. Talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Ciao.